Welcome to the Shir and Targumim Parshas Kedoshim. So we know the first parak, the first half of Parshas Kedoshim, Parak Yutes, deals with many, many mitzvos, some of the central mitzvos in the Torah itself. One of those mitzvos is the Isser, the prohibition against Lashon Hara. That's in Parak Yutes, Pasuk Tezayim. Oseilech Rachil Be'amecha. You should not go, it's usually translated, you should not go as a talebearer amidst your people. That's understood as being the source for the Isser, for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. There's very interesting translations here, both in the Yonasan Ben Uziel as well as in the Targum Unkelos. I'll start just with something in the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel that we've seen in different contexts before during the course of the year, and then we'll move back to see something that is common to both the Targum Unkelos and the Yonasan Ben Uziel, a certain translation of, you know, what it means to be prohibited from speaking Lashon Hara, which is subject to quite a bit of discussion between Rashi and the Ramban, as we'll see in a few moments. So the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel writes as follows. What does it mean, Loseilech Rachil Biamecha? You shouldn't go as a talebearer among your people. Lo sehevun ozlin basar lishon tlisoy. You shouldn't go to follow the lashon tlisoy. Literally, the language that has three parts, the tongue that has three parts to it. To hu kashay he kecharba dekotil min train chorfoy. Because lashon hara, the three pronged or the three faceted tongue, is as difficult and as deadly as a sword that's a double-edged sword that kills from both sides. So first of all, it's a very interesting imagery that we're given, that Lashon Hara is a double-edged sword. It kills on two sides. And what's this Lashon Tlisoy, that Lashon Hara is defined as the three-faceted language, you know, the tongue that has three parts to it. What's that? The forked tongue. Yeah, right, interesting. Yeah, it's a forked tongue. I guess it's a three-forked tongue, three-pronged tongue. Yeah. Right, in that sense. We saw earlier, the Yonasan Ben Uziel uses this language of Lashon Tlisoy earlier in his commentary, in his translation on the Chumash, and we saw there that the commentaries explain that the Yonasan Ben Uziel over here is referencing the words of Chazal, that Lashon Hara kills three individuals. It kills the one about whom the Lashon Hara is spoken, it kills the one who speaks the Lashon Hara, and it kills the one who is the recipient, the listener to the Lashon Hara. So consistently, throughout the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, whenever he refers to Lashon Hara, he always uses that very interesting language, the Lashon Tlisoy. It's the three-pronged tongue, the three-pronged type of language. You should know the most outstanding aspect of the Isser of Lashon Hara is that it kills three. There are three people who are the victims of Lashon Hara, not just the obvious victim, the one about whom the Lashon Hara is spoken, but the one who speaks the Lashon Hara as well as the one who's Mekabel, who hears and accepts the Lashon Hara. All three of them are victimized by the Lashon Hara which is going to be spoken. It would appear that that's also what the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel wishes to impart by saying that Lashon Hara is a double-edged sword. It kills on both sides. Meaning, the person who is speaking Lashon Hara no doubt feels that the object of his Lashon Hara is the victim, but he probably views himself as the victor, as the aggressor. In other words, I'm going to take out that guy, you know, by speaking Lashon Hara against him. And he doesn't realize that the sword that he's using against this person, metaphorically, is in point of fact, I guess that's a pun, in point of fact, it's a double-edged sword. I guess I get twice the salary for tonight's shiur. That's a double-edged sword, better believe it. Right? It's a double-edged sword that he uses against the victim. He thinks that, you know, the sword is only sharpened on one side, but in point of fact, the side of the sword that's facing him is also sharpened and can also kill. So it's a beautiful metaphor, you know, to describe the injurious effects of Lashon Hara, not only on the object of the Lashon Hara, the subject of the Lashon Hara, but on the one who's speaking the Lashon Hara as well. He's holding a double-edged sword. You know, what he thinks is hurting the other person is hurting himself just as much, right? So that would seem to be the imagery that the Yonasan ben Uzziel is sharing with us. Now again, that's not a literal translation of the Pasuk. There's nothing in the Pasuk itself that, on the surface, that would seem to indicate this imagery of a double-edged sword. But nonetheless, the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel wants to impress upon the listeners that, you know, Lashon Hara is a really bad thing. And not only is it a bad thing, it's bad for you, you know, to speak Lashon Hara. It's not just bad for the other guy. It's bad for you as well to speak Lashon Hara. The main thing, however, I want to focus on tonight is not so much this very captivating imagery in the Yonasan ben Uzziel, but a phrase which is used both by the Yonasan ben Uzziel in his continuation, as well as the Targum Onkelos himself. The Targum Onkelos translates, Lo Seilech Rachil Be'amecha, as Lo Seichol Kurtzin Be'amach. You should not be Ochel Kurtzin amidst your people. Now the phrase Ochel Kurtzin or Teichol Kurtzin is a phrase which appears in the Tanakh itself as a way of describing Lashon Hara. There's a Pasuk in Daniel, Perek Gimel Pasuk Ches, when it's describing how Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah refused to bow down to the golden statue which Nebuchadnezzar had erected and commanded that everybody had to bow down to. So we know Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah did not bow down to the statue. So the Pasuk says in Daniel, people went and they tattled to King Nebuchadnezzar about these three supposedly loyal subjects who refused to bow down. So the language which is used in Daniel, the first half of Daniel is written in Aramaic, the language which is used in Daniel is Va'achalu kartseihon di Yehudoi. They said Lashon Hara about the Jews, but the language which is used is Achalu kartseihon. Again, we won't translate it, but you know, we'll see the translation in just a few moments. That same language, Achalu kartseihon, you know, Teichu kurtzin, which Onkelos uses over here, is used by the Pasuk in Daniel. So in other words, the Tanakh itself, and I think this is an important point, the Tanakh itself utilizes this phrase in translating, in explaining Lashon Hara. The question is, what does the phrase mean? By the way, Chazal also use the phrase in the Gemara in describing Lashon Hara in various different contexts. The question is, what is the literal meaning of that phrase? Achalu kartseihon. So there's a very, very fascinating Rashi over here. Rashi spends a lot of time explaining this Lashon of the Targum. He writes, V'targumo lo seichal kurtzin, kimo v'acholu kartseyon di Yehudoi. Right? Rashi quotes this pasuk in Daniel, and he says that is another example where this phrase is used in describing Lashon Hara. So what does it mean? Very strange language. Nira be'enai, it appears in my eyes as follows. Shahoyo mishpotom lecho be'beis hamakabel divreim shum hal ta'o. It used to be the practice, says Rashi, that when a person went to speak serious Lashon Hara in somebody else's house, they would make a kiddush to honor the Lashon Hara that was being spoken. Right? In other words, Reuven would go over to Shimon's house, and he would say, you know, I need to tell you this, that, and the other thing about Levi. So when Shimon heard and accepted the Lashon Hara, they would eat something together. Why would they eat something together? V'hu gemar chizuk shedvarav mikuyamim v'yamidem al ha'emes. Eating something together was a sign to indicate that the listener truly accepted the words that were being said to him and saw them as being true. In other words, it ain't Lashon Hara until they have the Kiddush afterwards. So that's the language which we have in Daniel, as well as the Targum Onkelos over here. V'achalu kartseyon. V'achalu is from the Lashon of achila, of eating. You know, the language which the Targum Onkelos uses in describing Lashon Hara is eating Karatzin. We'll see what karatzin is in just a minute. But eating is intimately associated with Lashon Hara.
What was going to happen when you were doing
this? Okay, we'll get to it just a second. If you've been to many Kiddushim, the connection between Kiddushim and Lashon Hara, you know, isn't necessarily hard to understand. Right? It's true, but right? But here Rashi says that the Targum Onkelos, in translating the words Lashon Hara, introduces the idea that it has to do something with eating. And then he says as follows, V'osa ha'ata, that meal which is shared by the one telling the Lashon Hara and the one accepting the Lashon Hara, Nikreis achilas kurtzin. It's referred to as the eating of kurtzin. What's kurtzin? Lashon koreitz be'enav. The language of kurtzin implies winking with one's eyes. Shekein derech kol holchei rochel likrotz be'enehem. Ulirmos divrei rechilusan shlo yovinu sha'ar ashomim. Because says Rashi, the manner of people who speak Lashon Hara is very often not to be explicit, not to be upfront about what they're saying. They want to share their words of Lashon Hara secretly. So instead of just coming out and saying X, Y, and Z, they gesture with their hands, they wink with their eyes. Winking is kurtzin. So winking and nonverbal conveyance of Lashon Hara is associated with the very essence of Lashon Hara. Hence, the meal that was eaten by the one speaking the Lashon Hara and the one accepting the Lashon Hara was referred to as achilas kurtzin, literally the meal of the winks. You know, the meal that was associated with these devious winks in establishing the Lashon Hara that was said. So that's Rashi writes, that's this unusual language which the Pasuk of Daniel uses, as well as the Targum Onkelos over here, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel uses it as well. He says, you should not go l'meichal kurtzin, right, there's that language again, l'me'oko levar amoch, to cause distress to any fellow Jew by speaking Lashon Hara. Right? So this language of l'meichal kurtzin is referring to the meal that was eaten, I guess, when serious Lashon Hara was spoken, to seal the deal. Now, Rav David had asked before, well, what's this meal that people are eating as part of, saying Lashon Hara? So Rashi says a very interesting thing. Rashi says that when it was serious Lashon Hara that was conveyed from Reuven to Shimon, and, you know, the parties involved wanted to establish that what was said was true, they would eat a meal afterwards. Now, on a certain level, that seems very bizarre. What does eating a meal have to do with conveying information from one person to another? But the truth is, in many, many contexts, we do exactly that, right? We seal a deal between people. We'll drink a l'chaim. I don't know what I'm saying.
We have Yitzchak and Ali. You have Abraham and they have these meals together.
Right.
Aaron and when Yisrael comes, they have a meal.
Right, right. No, so we'll see that. In other words, we see that in Chumash consistently. In other words, a meal is a way of sealing a pact in some way. Right? So when Reuven speaks...
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, but yeah. Especially the meal of Yisrael.
Right.
That was the emes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing what he did.
Right.
That was the whole purpose of it,
right,
to show the emes of Hashem.
Right, right, right. So you see this concept, and again, we'll start with the concept just in our own experience, but then we'll see that there are many examples in Chumash and Tanakh of this phenomena. You know, when there's a serious deal that's going on, and we want to show that everything is true and everything is agreed upon, and the pact has been entered into, very often in our own experience, the way we do that is by sharing some kind of food or drink together. Again, the whole idea of sealing a deal and making a l'chaim, right? What does drinking alcoholic beverages have to do with the fact that we entered into a deal together? Because somehow sharing a meal shows a kind of fellowship that we've entered into, and it shows that we hope that everything that we're doing here is going to work out. That expresses itself in so many circumstances. Again, there are many examples in Chumash where, Avraham and Avimelech, Yitzchak and Avimelech, Lavan and Yaakov, Vayochlu Sham al Hagol, right? Now, there are many, many examples where, you know, two parties enter into a deal together, and to seal the deal, to show that everybody's in a fellowship together, so they'll eat or they'll drink something to show that we're together. In light of this, you understand that even greater, to an even greater degree, why Chazal set up so many prohibitions that involve Jews and non-Jews eating or drinking together, right? What do I care? So we're just going to have a drink together. You know, the Chochmas Adam was machmir that Jews and non-Jews shouldn't even sit down to have drink and coffee together, right? Ad kedei kach. So again, I don't think most people paskin that way, but you know, you have this concept that when people share food or drinks, they enter into a kind of a fellowship together. There's a bond that's created between them. And, you know, in the case of a social bond between Jews and non-Jews, that's something that we're looking to avoid. You know, we're not looking to have that close a social relationship formulated between those two parties. So too with the Lashon Hara, you know, Reuven is going out on a limb by sharing this privileged information with Shimon, right? And again, we're talking about what seems to be privileged information over here. You know, it's something that you only share with winks, with innuendo, with gestures, and the like. So to show that Reuven and Shimon have entered into a pact together, they would eat together afterwards, in order to show that we're together, and, you know, we hope that whatever we're plotting over here is going to come to fruition. That meal is such an integral part of the Lashon Hara that the Aramaic translation of Lashon Hara focuses on the meal that was eaten as part of making sure that the Lashon Hara would be successful. The mission, the Lashon Hara mission, would be successful between the two parties. There's a beautiful piece from the Shemi Shmuel where he takes this idea, which obviously, you know, in this context, the meal which is being shared by the Bali Lashon Hara is something negative, but the Shemi Shmuel says the flip side of that is that in Torah, whenever you want something positive to come together and to gel and to have a kiyum, you know, to be everlasting, we typically associate that with food. And the example that he gives, says the Shemi Shmuel, is a sudas siyum. You just finished learning something, so we're going to have cake and a lechayim. I don't understand. You just finished learning Maseches Tainus. So we're going to celebrate our learning of Maseches Tainus by having cake and a drink. That seems a little bit odd, of an odd way to celebrate Maseches Tainus, right? But why are we doing that? You know. So the Shemi Shmuel says, you see from this idea of Lashon Hara, if in the realm of Tumah and Avera, eating after the act is performed gives it a certain stamp, a certain kiyum, a certain longevity, so how much more so in the realm of Kedusha, if we do something and we want it to last, eating something symbolically after we finish that act of Kedusha gives a certain kiyum, a certain longevity to the act which we're performing. We're hoping by eating the siyum, even a small modest siyum after we finish learning, so that gives the learning itself a certain lasting power, you know, that we're davening, that the learning that we did should stay with us. That's the idea of a siyum, says the Shemi Shmuel. Ultimately goes back to this Rashi with Lashon Hara. Yeah.
I was just wondering, I don't know if I'm wrong here, I'm right or wrong, I'm making an extrapolation to say the fact that we eat before Yom Kippur,
right,
is so important, and it's more important because I was saying actually fasting on Yom Kippur.
Right, so the question would be, what would that be coming as a kiyum for? In other words, is it, you know, the kiyum would typically be, the idea of having a suda motzoi Yom Kippur, you know, and it could be the Shemi Shmuel says this, the idea of having a suda motzoi Yom Kippur, which, you know, is an inyan, not just because you're hungry, right? But, you know, there is an inyan of having a suda motzoi Yom Kippur, because this way you're showing that the avod of Yom Kippur came together, right? In other words, you're not just supposed to have snacks motzoi Yom Kippur. It's kedai to wash and have a proper suda, you know, because you're not just eating because you're hungry, although you are, you know, you're eating as a celebration. As Chazal quote the pasuk, "Lecha chol b'simcha lechmecha." You know, "Kikvar rotzo elokim es ma'asecha." You know, we we feel confident that we were forgiven on Yom Kippur. So to show our confidence in the fact that we were forgiven, we eat a proper suda after Yom Kippur is over to show, we feel confident. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted everything that we did. That's the idea of a suda in general. He says is to show that whatever was done beforehand should be accepted and should have a long staying power. This is a fascinating Rashi. The Ramban, as he so often does, did not find it so fascinating. Or even if he found it fascinating, he didn't think it was correct. The Ramban over here quotes Rashi. Ve'ein b'mash shepirush batargum hazeh ta'am oreach. The Ramban says, without mincing any words, the interpretation that Rashi gives to this targum lacks taste and lacks smell. Now, I think that's the Ramban's idea of a joke, right? Because Rashi is saying that the targum is all about food. You know, the Ramban is saying, well, it doesn't taste good, it doesn't smell good. I don't like this commentary at all. Why not? Ki hashomea min harochel lo yishova lo sheyamin dvorav lo yiten lo os o mofes. I don't understand. They're eating a meal to show that the guy who's accepting the Lashon Hara really believes the one who's telling him the Lashon Hara? Is that how Lashon Hara usually works? That the guy, you go over, you tell a juicy piece of Lashon Hara to a guy, and he says, wait a minute, I just want to swear to you that everything you told me, I believe you 100%, absolutely. No, you just listen, you chuckle along with him, and that's it. What, you have to do a maisa? You have to do an act to show that you actually accept what he's saying as being true? Matam lachila zo. What would be the purpose of this eating?
Uh-huh.
Unevuchadnezzar b'hodoas hatzadikim oso masha oso lo heechilom lo malshinim v'lo nishba lohem. Right? So, again, take the example from Daniel, which is the place in Tanakh where this achilas kurtzin appears, right? The tattletales go to Nebuchadnezzar and they talk about Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. They don't want to bow down to the statue. So you're telling me, says the Ramban, that when they came to Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar said, thank you so much for coming and tattling and Hanani, Mishael, Azariah. Let's make a l'chaim. Let's have something to eat. There doesn't seem to be any indication that that's what happened over there. But yet that's the source in Tanakh where this language of achilas kurtzin appears. It appears with regard to Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar made a l'chaim after they came in and they said Lashon Hara about Hananu, Mishael, V'Azariah? I don't think so. Right? So what does this language mean? So he gives a very different interpretation. Aval ikur Lashon Ha'aramis bekan eino elo Lashon Hashmoas ko. The language of seichel, lo seichel kurtzin, teichel doesn't mean eat, that's Hebrew. Teichel in Aramaic, says the Ramban, means to raise your voice. To raise your voice. And he goes on to quote a whole bunch of Gemaras and other Aramaic sources where teichel or achule means to raise one's voice. V'hinehu loshen kol mashmi'a kol, sheyodia chefzo b'lo chituch milos. It's referring to a person who raises his voice in order to get his intent across without having to use any words. And he explains, "V'delech harachilim lavo b'rabim olifnei amoshel." When people are tattletales and they're balei lashon hara, they go in public or they go in front of an important person, a ruler. V'yamu bigronon. They make a funny noise with their throats. You can clear your throat in a way that conveys lashon hara. V'yikritzu beineihem, and again they wink with their eyes. Lirmoz kishamu dvarim, to indicate that they have something to say. Ad sheyiftzeru bohem, I have something to say until people start saying, "No, why are you coughing? Why are you coughing?" Nowadays, people, they cough. They say, "Oh, I know why you're coughing. Go stand over there. I don't want to be anywhere near you," right? But, in those days, why are you coughing? Why are you coughing? So they say, okay, I have something I'd like to share with you. V'yagidu bohem. And they say them. Alkei nikroim ochle kurtzin. That's what ochle kurtzin over here means. It has nothing to do with eating. It means noamim birimozim. They raise their voices and they cough with little hints. They wink, they cough, they raise their voices. Everything nonverbal to convey the Lashon Hara, that's the Ramban says. There's no meal over here that's being discussed. The common denominator to both Rashi and the Ramban, which is fascinating, is that both Rashi and the Ramban interpret the Targum Onkelos as describing Lashon Hara in non-verbal terms. In other words, you know, it's true. The Chafetz Chaim says, in Sefer Chafetz Chaim, that you can convey Lashon Hara even without words. But I think if you were to ask most of us, we would say Lashon Hara primarily is about using words. It's primarily something verbal. And by the way, it's also true that you can convey Lashon Hara non-verbally. But the Pasuk, according to the Targum Onkelos, is exactly the opposite. The main aspect of Lashon Hara is through non-verbal cues. And then you also can convey Lashon Hara in a verbal fashion. Mamash lehepich, you know, the opposite from what I think we would normally assume. But don't think that non-verbal Lashon Hara is somehow less significant. Both Rashi and the Ramban stress in the Targum Onkelos that the Iker Lashon Hara, according to the Pasuk, the main Lashon Hara, is the non-verbal Lashon Hara. The raising of the voice, the winking, the snapping, the raised eyebrows, all of that is the real Lashon Hara, and the words are also considered to be a form of Lashon Hara as well. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha, Omer, Ratzach, Kodesh Baruch Hu,